Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
If you're hearing talk of the SEC heading to a 9-game conference schedule, believe it. It's Chuck Oliver Show on a Tuesday. Excuse me, Chuck? I can't hear you. Everybody knows that the Southeastern Conference, why would they play 8 games? Look what happened this past year. They played 10. And even by my own assessment, if we DeLorean back to, you know what, folks? I'll say if we DeLorean back to like the second or third Saturday of October, I remember coming, I think we after week three, I came in here on a Monday and I said, if we're going to be, you know, we're all adults here, we're going to be transparent, the SEC don't look as interesting as it normally does. And it's because LSU already had a loss. This team had a loss. Georgia had a loss. Auburn had a – you just looked around the conference, you're like, this doesn't look the way it's supposed to. Texas A&M got blown out. And so if you look, it was either the third or fourth Saturday. I was like, we're at the point where we're normally 1 month into the season. Now, obviously, you know, by the calendar of last fall, it was off because they started late. But I think it was after the third or fourth weekend of games in the Southeastern Conference that I remember coming in and said, this isn't the same thing. Because Mississippi State wasn't 2-0 in non-conference before they jumped into the deep fryer. Arkansas hadn't had at least had the opportunity to fatten a little bit before going to Dallas and taking on Texas A&M. I said, this league will not be as interesting this year, I promise you. And you know what? It wasn't as interesting. And part of that was because, again, there was no fattening up process. And in the SEC and every conference, you sort of need that. And you know what else outside the Power Five? You need that as well. I think it was Nick Saban. In fact, I'm certain it was, who said these games are important to these group of five. Well, they're important to a group of five. He was talking FCS, I believe. It's important to group of five as well. So there's reasons to play them. There's not reasons to play as many as they do. And when Nick Saban was making his point about, I don't know, playing Savannah State, he says that, you know, these FCS programs, that's different. You're basically stealing from your fans at that point. Did Jacksonville State beat Ole Miss about 10 years ago? That sounds right. Yeah. So ever so often, you know, David picked up the stone and he slung it and he hurt the Philistine. Ever so often that happens. But for the most part, you're ripping off your fans. And there's a reason that the FCS matchup is week one or two almost always. You know what that reason is? Your fans are so desperate to see good old State U on the field again that they'll pay to go see you take on Alcorn State. Georgia played Southern at home of several Septembers ago. Those are scheduled wins. It's not going to be a competitive thing out there virtually every single time. That's FCS. But even with Chuck Oliver saying, yeah, the increase in the schedule made the SEC not as interesting last year, it wasn't – that's not really the right way to say it. It's there were two more conference games added, not one. And this discussion is going to be about a 9-game conference, like. There were two conference games added, not just one. Additionally, there were no non-conference games. So it does all work in concert together. For a better program, the non-conference game can serve so many functions. It's especially, and it's not like the old days where you still had JV teams and how many guys can we let her? That's not really what it is, but there are a lot of reasons. And so if that was my summary from this past fall, how can I now be saying, nope, 9-game schedule, believe it? Because I'm not telling you what's best for the game, the conference, the schools, any of that. You, the fans. I'm not saying what's – I'm telling you what's going to happen. I didn't say if you're hearing talk of an SEC heading to a 9-game conference schedule, get on board. It's a great idea. I didn't say that. I said if you hear talk about it, believe it. And if it is college athletics, particularly football, particularly the SEC – if I tell you there's one major reason behind this, with no more facts, what would you think, Money? If I told you that the SEC was considering a rule change, then if it was on field, you would say player safety. If it was anything to do with recruiting or promotion or ticket, or you would say money. The reason that the SEC is looking to expand potentially, maybe possibly, to a 9-game conference slate is money. About 3 weeks ago or so, maybe it was about a month ago, saw a headline that Ole Miss football adds future home-and-home series against Brigham Young. And Ole Miss, as I was reading, they will travel to Provo, Utah in 2028. And then BYU will take on Ole Miss in Oxford in 2029. I was like, well, bully for the Rebels. They added a really high-quality non-conference opponent because they do have a conference guideline to satisfy of playing a 9th game outside the conference that is against a Power 5 opponent, BYU counts. And so I'm looking at 2028, and I see that Ole Miss already had, what was I just saying, scheduled dubs? South Alabama, Alcorn State, and UConn. Lord knows if we DeLorean 7 years into the future what we're going to find on those three campuses as far as the football program. But I would assume that as time goes on, especially with the just explosion of cash, that is a bigger explosion on a campus like Ole Miss and a conference like the SEC, that as time goes on, folks, this money thing is a divisive wedge that will become permanent and deep. And so by 2028, it's far less likely that a program outside of the Power 5, especially the SEC, will be able to have a Rise Up Saturday. And that's part of why Ole Miss scheduled South Alabama, Alcorn, and UConn. They don't want a Rise Up Saturday. Ow. Somebody like elbowed the person next to him or her in the Ole Miss. Oh, do they have board of regents or trustees or whoever it is? Hey, wait a minute. What about that SEC thing? What do you mean that SEC? Oh, we got to play a Power 5. Call Brigham Young. So now in 2028, they got BYU on the schedule. They didn't want to. And I will allege that if Ole Miss – I'm not picking on you, Rebels. I'm just using you as an example. I allege that if Ole Miss did not have a conference requirement, they wouldn't have scheduled Brigham Young or any of the other 64-5-ish Power 5 possibilities. They wouldn't even schedule in conference like we've seen in the ACC a couple of times. Schedule a conference opponent as a non-conference game. They wouldn't do that. If Ole Miss wasn't required to do this, Ole Miss would have filled that fourth slot with somebody like South Alabama, Alcorn, or UConn. Carve it in stone, 11th commandment. It would have happened. It's why all three of those games were already scheduled, and until a month ago, they had that one open Saturday going, what are we going to do? SEC's got a rule. So to satisfy the SEC rule, it's 8 conference games, and Ole Miss said, all right, the 9th game, we will travel to a team that's not even in a conference. For a 9th game, we'll travel to Oklahoma State. For a 9th game, we'll travel to Penn State. The reason the SEC is going to seriously consider adding that 9th game is so you won't have SEC teams traveling to the Pac-12, Big 12, Big 10, ACC, or anywhere else. that it will remove part of the motivation for opening the season against Florida State. And instead, you'll open the season against your ninth SEC opponent. If we look at Ole Miss, again, they're checking boxes, folks. 2027, do you know why BYU was added to 2028 and 29? Because in 2027, they had already scheduled Oregon State. Hey, when do we want to play Brigham Young? Is it 27? Hold it. We've already got our ninth game in 2027, son. How about 28? Let's see. We know we got South Alabama, Alcorn, and UConn. Sold. 2028 it is. Check the box. Played one more game against a Power 5 opponent. We checked the box. If you look at 2030, it's the return date with Oregon State. If you look at 2032, it's Virginia Tech. 2033, Purdue. All of that subject to change. But the SEC realizes, wait a minute, why are we requiring all of our member institutions to give away a game every other year to another conference? Why don't we keep those games as conference matchups every season instead of every other year? So basically what you're going to do is add seven more games to the SEC schedule. Now, Ole Miss, they may still be going on the road, but they ain't going to Provo. It's going to Knoxville. And that's SEC money. When they go to Provo, that's Provo money. That's Brigham Young money. At one point, it was Western Athletic Conference money. And then after that, I think it was maybe Mountain West. Now it's just BYU money. And Greg Sankey and the powers that be in Birmingham, I think they're going to look around and go, this makes sense. Suddenly, we would like to increase the competition in our, after decades of going, no, eight is plenty. They're finally realizing, oh, yes, we do need to make a change. And what's that reason for? Cash.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
This summer, we will unveil detailed renderings and plans for a new football operations building, a new indoor football practice facility, a new basketball operations building, and a renovation and expansion of the McGugin Center. Construction on both the football operations building and the basketball operations building will begin following the conclusion of this upcoming football season.
Anchors down. That is Vanderbilt Athletic Director Candace Lee. And the Vandy United Fund got $200 million already stacked up, $100 million from donors, $100 million gift from the school, which is a big deal because that's an actual check that Vanderbilt looks around and says, yeah, we got it. Stroke a check, $100 million. Here you go, athletic department. So the money changes. They're trying to get a cap on another $100 million there, and it's Vanderbilt, and they will. So they have wealthy alum, not the issue. Getting them to write a check, I've always been told that was an issue. I don't even believe that now. I don't know how Vanderbilt had been trying. I mean, every athletic department, you at least send out a postcard or something. And I told you, I send in $250 a year to my alma mater. I get a window sticker. And then you know what somebody told me about 2 years ago? Because I mentioned that on the air. It's like my donation, my opulent gift, $250 a year. And I said, and I get a sticker. It's about the size of a playing card. And somebody emailed me, I think, or tweeted maybe, and said, no, everybody gets the sticker. So there's a chance I've just been given my money. I don't even, like, the sticker, there's no status even to the sticker. So I need to call and find out, like, how much do I have to give before I get at least a different sticker? But raising money at my alma mater hasn't really, believe me, money at my school ain't been a, not been a problem. We paid $14 million for a television. Yeah, it's a good TV. But you know what I noticed the very first time I was in Jordan-Hare after the big video board went up? I looked around. All these people spent all this time driving to Auburn from somewhere else. And by the way, this is true in Athens, Tuscaloosa, Baton Rouge. It's going to be true in Nashville. All this time driving there on a Saturday or a Friday night or a Thursday afternoon, if you're wealthy and got an RV and you're of an age. All that time and then all that money to get into the stadium, even more to have good tickets, which I think we did. We were about 20 rows up on about the 20. Those are pretty good seats. I looked around. All of us were watching television. It's like we could have stayed at home and watched the game on TV. Not my hand to the Lord. I looked around. The only reason, because I saw the back of everybody's heads kind of tilted up and to the right, looking at the video board. It's like you could stay home and watch television. So I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but they got $14 million for it, and it went up, man. You can see it from the International Space Station. But Vanderbilt is now not only they have access to money, well, they've actually raised the money. They're going to raise more, and they're just pouring it in. We talked about the facility specifically yesterday. And that last part, she said the upgrade to the existing facility, that's the $31 million football facility that opened in 2013 that actually will now – no football at all anymore. It will be for other sports like men's and women's diving, swimming and diving, who – they've had the locker room at the pool, and now they're going to have a facility. What up, Dan?
Yeah, no longer have to have the old steel door lockers right there that kind of go back to the 1970s and 80s, I guess, when those became in vogue. No,
got to have a master lock.
You want solid wood now. You want to make sure you don't have to have that padlock anymore. It seems like every year, and even during the season, we do this with Nick Saban of, you know, what makes him go, what makes him who he is, all these different types of things. And, Chuck, remember I said last year it came down to two things. As I said, number one, coming off the 2019 season when, God forbid, he had lost more than one regular season game, started to have questions of, is this the beginning of the end? Is it going to be Alabama football going forward? And Nick Saban said, not only will it be, I'll make the changes I need to make, and we'll come back with a vengeance. And then they came back with a vengeance. He gets COVID. And during that time, he realizes to himself sitting at home, God, this sucks. I don't want to do this. I want to keep coaching. I want to keep being a part of a team. And I want to have that in my life. You know what? I'm going to find a way to make sure that I do have that in my life even longer. So it's the whole thing of were you rejuvenated or rejuvenated, all that kind of stuff that Nick Saban was asked about, when the fire has always been there for him. I think that if nothing else, he, much like us in life, needed a little bit of a reminder to say, yeah, you know what? I do still have that. And yeah, guess what? I still want to do this at the level I'm doing it for now, because he knows that if there is any hint of a slip up going forward, he's probably not going to get another chance to be able to say, yeah, I can find a new gear.
There are so many coaches that when, I mean, as intently as fan bases, especially in the SEC, especially a place like Bama, as intently as the fan base watches the games every single Saturday and the practices and the scrimmages and the recruiting and the hirings and the firings and everything else, there are coaches who, after a disaster, want to say, nothing to see here, everything's fine. I give Saban credit. He calls it what it is, and then instead of having to invent motivation, he actually, you know, what's done is done. Let's make the best of it, use it as motivation, make sure it doesn't happen again.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
We go from the deep south to the Pacific Northwest, and that's not just the scene setter. He's literally in the woods somewhere in Oregon right now, but he also is helping. I want to get the list straight. He's helping college football players. He's helping coaches, whether head coaches, coordinators, assistant coaches, agents, board of regents, head coaches, athletic directors, you name it. When it comes to personnel movement around the game of college football, he is on top of it. There is a much more elegant way to put that. I want to welcome him on now from CFB Matrix. It is Dave Bartu. Dave, how are you on this Tuesday?
I am doing great, man. Actually, that was an elegant way of putting it.
That's
exactly what it is.
All right.
I help all those people. I tell them a story with numbers, and hopefully it gives them an edge somewhere, whether it's hiring or firing or finding a job or finding an agent or
transferring.
Who knows what. Yeah. I haven't got into the transfer stuff from a player standpoint. Yeah, I'm waiting for a player to go, hey, Dave, what do the numbers say? And I would actually have an answer because I've mapped out your height, your weight, where you're from, the county you're born, the schools you've been successful with. Give me your GPA, your scores, your marital status, your parents. You give me information, and I will tell you the kids with that profile where they have and have not been successful because it varies by position, by location. It's fascinating when you start looking at the demographics and attrition of college football.
Dave Bartu, I know you can get him at CFB Matrix on Twitter. We'll make sure he gives his phone number before he gets out of here. Honestly, if you're a coach, an AD, agent, whomever, and you need to get in touch with somebody with Dave's knowledge, Dave will make sure you can do that. Dave, we were talking about Vanderbilt previous segment and the fact that they're outlaying $300 million for facilities and increased budgets and going to get a helicopter and everything else. Have you done any analysis on what are the most impactful areas for a program to spend on? But then the bigger picture is, what recruiting success can a program spend its way to? Because you ain't going to have success if you're not spending.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, I mean, it's an arms race, obviously, but everybody's involved with it. You know, here's the question I have when it comes down to Vanderbilt or anybody trying to do what Vanderbilt's doing is, are you trying to get ahead or are you just trying to keep up? And I would say from a Vanderbilt standpoint, they're just trying to keep up right now. You know, so many people have developed new facilities and weight rooms and this and that and the other. It's a battle to try to keep up with the Joneses for players. Every once in a while, you can develop your way. Given the right opportunity, you can build your way into better recruiting. A couple of examples where we've seen that: Clemson used to be a mid-20s recruiter, now is a, you know, top 10 recruiter. A lot of it with winning football games, but a lot of it with facilities. Same thing here in Oregon. Oregon has won the facilities arms race early and keeps improving it. But it's rare that a program goes out and spends a lot of money on developing facilities because everybody's doing that to create an impact. I think right now people are spending just to try to keep up.
Continuing with Dave Bartu again from CFB Matrix. I know you get calls all throughout the year, and so it's the last week of March, and we've already had spring games, and we got more coming up this weekend, et cetera. Is the phone still buzzing? And from whom in particular? Is it cyclical?
No, the phone's not buzzing right now. It's downtime. Obviously, we still have some stuff in play. Kansas is still out there, and they're going to poach somebody who is then going to need to find to somebody to poach. So it's not just one program looking for guys. It's a real domino effect when you start talking about a P5 program. So that's still out there a little bit. The main focus right now is getting ready for the next cycle. So most of the guys I'm working with right now are football ops guys. And what we're doing is we are providing them reports on all of their current staff. And then the top five targets if those guys leave. So if you're the head of football operations at South Carolina, you look at all the guys that are out there. Hey, we might lose our defense. What happens if we lose White, our defensive coordinator, to a better program? Who are the next five guys? And so that's what we're working on right now, is we're getting the head of football ops, we're getting head coaches, we're getting these programs ready for the next silly season that's actually right around the corner. It starts in August, September. That's when people start looking to replace guys, is literally before the season even starts.
And that's due diligence for someone, either an AD with his coach or the head coach with an assistant. You're right about that. Are there because when you're talking about wanting to have four or five names as a backup for each coach that is currently employed, to me, again, that's responsible. That's good leadership. That's due diligence. Are there head coaches that don't take that step? Because that, to me, leads to stomping out fires at the last minute.
I'm sure there's guys that do that. I mean, everybody that hires us does it, part of the program is being ahead, is being ready. Even if you don't think your guy is leaving, if we've got the AD of Georgia on the phone right now, he'd go, I'm not losing Kirby Smart. He ain't going anywhere. Where else is he going that's better than Georgia? There really isn't a spot for him to do that. So he doesn't have to worry about that. But at the same time, what if, as one AD every year, he's been calling me for 5 years, it's the same quote. Hey, my guy might get hit by a bus. I got to be ready to go. So I agree with you 100% that it is a responsible organization as an athletic director, head coach, to be ready if something happens. But there's no question in my mind that there are guys out there that will put that off and wait till the problem arises before really being ready to do it.
Continue with Dave Bartu again on Twitter at CFB Matrix. You follow him, you get everything. Dave, I just want to use an example. I know we've talked a little bit about Coach Ogeron before and his odyssey with hiring not just a DC, but the well he chose to go back to on offense, et cetera. Drill down a little bit more on that, because I can't imagine that, at least from the outside, I'll put it that way, it didn't look like this was a very well-organized, it looked spur of the moment and knee-jerk. And at a place, anywhere in the SEC, but especially at LSU, that's not supposed to be the look.
No, it's like I said, it's what was successful for him in hiring Joe Brady was simply, and I don't know the story that well, but I think the Joe Brady hire was something along the lines of he was recommended, ran into him in an elevator. I'm not sure what the whole thing was, but this is a lot of people labeled him as an up-and-coming star and was in the NFL ranks and went to LSU, won a national title. And so Ed went out and found names of guys that had the same kind of label. That he's just trying to find a Joe Brady clone out of the NFL that everybody said is going to be a great coordinator or a great coach at the NFL level, and he is trying to do that, replicate that lightning in a bottle scenario that he had before. So, man, if it works, wow. Maybe he found a way to evaluate and find guys that will be effective at the college football level. But I think you and I have both bet against that lightning in the bottle happening again in that manner. Joe Brady was special. I think the situation was special, too. Yeah. LSU has a lot of talent. Dave Aranda had been there for several years. The defense was in order. You had a senior quarterback. Everything just kind of, I think we're going to look back at this and go, how in the hell did that happen? how did it all come together? I mean, it's like a fairy tale, because I don't believe that it's going to work out doing it the same way that he did with Brady and just finding him and getting lucky. And it's not just one guy. He's doing it on both sides of the football. So you're at LSU. If you're an LSU fan, I think you just got to just hold your breath this year and don't expect too much, because you have two guys. You have your offense and defensive coordinator that are calling plays and have never done so in their life before.
Last stop I want to make before we take our break, and then we'll come back and wrap up hour one with Dave. Last stop is Columbia, South Carolina. And you know, Shane Beamer, he put together a staff, and then he had to put together a staff again, at least about a third of it. And to me, you know, that's just a guy who decided, yeah, I'll take your job. And then 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, he's like, nah, I'm going to go somewhere else. That's not really on Shane Beamer. I didn't get the stomping out. Now, like I said, I didn't know every name, especially the offensive coordinator. I didn't know him. But I knew everybody else, but I didn't have extensive opinions about them. But it never took on the look of stomping out fires. The rookie coach doesn't know what to do. At least that was from the outside. What was your take about Shane Beamer when he had to go back the second round of coaches?
You know, things happen in that regard. A lot of coaching moves are how good is your buddy? So maybe he was just a victim of some unfortunate circumstances where a couple of these guys were better friends with some other coaches. Who knows what?
Yeah.
And just jumped at the opportunity. I think from the plus side, if you're a South Carolina fan, you have to go, okay, the positive thing, it appears that Shane is hiring guys that other people want. That's actually a good thing, you know. You know, who knows there? The two big guys, though, I think the two best hires that he made didn't change. They stuck. Getting Clayton White, I think he has a very, very high ceiling. And bringing in Pete Lembo, who is an excellent special teams coordinator, but also is a really good head coach. I think Lembo and White were easily the two best hires of the entire staff, whether it was the first or second, any of the rounds that Shane went through. Those were the two best guys. And so I think, like I said, if you're a South Carolina fan, you just got to go. I think you got to look at it from, well, he hired good guys. Somebody else stole them away for better friends, better positions. And hopefully he hired somebody of equal or greater value.
Dave Bartu, it's every Tuesday, bottom of hour one. We will break, come back, wrap up the hour next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now, more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
There is less and less mystery. Ahead of, what, 4 weeks from right now, we'll basically be toeing the line of the 2021 NFL Draft. And I got a man on the phone right now. We talk recruiting and coaching changes, and we talk all kinds of stuff along the lines of, like I said before, people movement, whether it's players, coaches, whatever, people movement, and how it is likely to influence the outcome of college football games on a regular week-to-week basis. But Dave Bartu from CFP Matrix also, he's got – I'll take the Pepsi challenge, folks, with his analysis of quarterback prospects going into the NFL draft. I'll compare it to anybody else's. It's really good stuff. I want to welcome you back on now from CFP Matrix. Dave, you want to talk some quarterbacks?
Dude, all day. I love this subject.
All right. Well, Urban Meyer said there's less and less mystery. He basically said, I think it was a couple of days ago, yep, we're taking Trevor Lawrence. That's what it's going to be. That is a tremendous choice, and God bless everybody involved. Should there be more of a discussion in Jacksonville in your mind, or if whoever has the number one overall pick, no, it's Trevor Lawrence?
No, I think you got to go with Trevor Lawrence just because there's two things that come into play with this position. Is number one, it's the most important position in football. But number two is you have to, and because it's so important, you have to take a risk at the position that maybe you normally wouldn't, because if you fail to take that risk and somebody else succeeds, then it's like a double whammy. See, when you take Trevor Lawrence, it's great because if he doesn't work out, nobody can be mad about it, right? I mean, it's like Scott Frost at Nebraska. No Nebraska fan can be mad about Scott Frost. 0-36, you can't be mad about it because it was a no-brainer hire. It was, you have to do this. And if it doesn't work out, nobody can be mad about it. And that's the same thing with Trevor Lawrence. If he doesn't work, if he gets hurt, it just, you have to take him there because of his track record and just because of the hype. Now, after that, then I think, you got a lot of other guys on the list. But from a Trevor Lawrence standpoint, it doesn't matter who has the number one pick. You've got to take that guy there because of all the pressures to do so.
I have speculated that the Jets, if they decide, no, dadgum it, we invested in Sam Darnold, let's at least find something out. Maybe they say, well, let's go Penei Sewell, and we'll at least give the kid some bookends with Mekhi Becton from last year, and we'll at least see what he can do with some protection, maybe. But you've also said you think Zach Wilson is as good as any prospect in the draft, if I'm remembering correctly. So if he goes 2 to the Jets, less mystery again. The Niners trade up to 3, and they're flat out saying, yeah, we're taking a quarterback at 3. If that's Justin Fields, what would they have in Justin Fields as a Sunday guy, not a Saturday guy?
They would have an extremely high risk. The profile of a Justin Fields coming out of Ohio State is a very low likelihood that he is going to be successful at the NFL level. I do like his age. He's played a lot of football games, which is a plus. But the system that he is in is a system that, from an NFL level, is really not successful. And the biggest thing is, he's surrounded by talent. Ohio State wins most of their games without needing him. His numbers look great, but how many times have we seen a quarterback come out of a top 10 recruiter that obliterates everybody, that has unbelievable numbers, that gets to the NFL and just simply falls apart?
Like Dwayne Haskins?
All of them. Oh, actually, tell me an Ohio State quarterback that's had a good NFL career. I'll wait.
A quarterback?
Yeah.
Because wasn't it – who was the kid that switched to safety for the Rams? Was it Steve Belisario or
something like that? But yeah. But I try to, one of the things I always would tell kids is if you go to Ohio State and you want to be in the NFL as a quarterback, you are going there to try to cash a check. You are not going there to train to be a quarterback, because the talent level that surrounds you at Ohio State doesn't require a mental and physical effort to win football games as it does in the NFL. So you're going to have great numbers. Mac Jones has unbelievable numbers at Alabama, but he's going to be a great check casher. But as the numbers say, he's the biggest risk in this entire draft. So draft all the Ohio State guys you want. I will bet against them every single time.
Wrapping up a day bar two from CFB Matrix, I want to go one spot lower, because there is a scenario, Dave, where whoever's drafting at 4, currently it's the Atlanta Falcons, but whoever's at 4, that team could select Trey Lance at 4, and he's the 4th quarterback off the board. If a team selects Trey Lance, especially 4th overall, but what will that NFL team have in Trey Lance, in your opinion?
Another massive risk. I don't like this draft. I really, really don't. Lawrence is a good risk. Wilson has the biggest upside. But after that, these are, you look at their numbers, these guys are a bunch of failures waiting to happen. And Trey Lance, he started 15 games at the FCS level with basically the number one talented team in college football. I think Trey Lance and Mac Jones are basically the same guy, which is 92% bust rate. But like I said, it's the number one position, so you can't risk somebody else taking him down the road and looking like a failure. But I don't care who drafts Lance and Jones. I lump both of them basically as the same guy. They are inexperienced on high-talented teams, and the numbers say you bet against these guys 10-1 of having a decent, even a decent NFL career.
I had a buddy of mine doing some draft analysis, and he was talking Jones and Zach Wilson, and he said Zach Wilson is throwing to future CPAs. Mac Jones is throwing to a Heisman winner and a guy who was better than the Heisman winner. So what do you say in response? We only got like a minute and a half left to the fact mm-hmm. that, well, nobody could have done better than Mac Jones. Like, I mean, you could have had Peyton Manning, you know, in his final year at Tennessee with the same he couldn't have had a better statistical season. So how do you balance that out?
You don't, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's just, you just, the numbers just say that these guys aren't learning the quarterback position at Alabama. You're not learning how to lead a team at Alabama at the NFL level because you're surrounded by so much talent. You're probably correct. You put Justin Fields, you put Wilson, you put Trey Lance, you put, you know, you name it. You put Trask there, you put Mond there. They probably all put up unbelievable numbers, but is that training them to be a starting NFL quarterback?
Yeah, and that's,
by the numbers, no.
And that's one thing. The whole, you know, the whole the scout's point of view is it's not the numbers; it's how did he get to the numbers. And if the specific reason that Mac Jones got to the numbers was because Devonta was, you know, melting a corner's face mask as he flew past him, well, that kind of explains it on the wide receiver side. If, you know, how did you get to those numbers because you got a howitzer on your right shoulder, you know, that's the answer that scouts are looking for, I believe.
Right. Look at it the other way. Okay, instead of saying, what would Wilson or Lance or Lawrence or Field do at Alabama, what would all of those guys done at BYU?
Yeah.
Go the other way.
Yeah.
Go. How much did you elevate your crappy talented team versus the teams you're playing? Not how much numbers did you put up on a super team that has an NFL offense, NFL everything at every position.
Dave, it is tremendous stuff, man. We will do it again in 7 days, okay?
Take it easy, buddy.
All right, Dave Bartu again, CFB Matrix. And dadgummit, I forgot to ask him for a cell phone number. Folks, it's not a big deal. He'll give it to you. In fact, tweet him. DM him. Go to CFB Matrix. Say, hey, I'd like to have a phone conversation. He'll give you a cell phone number. It is what he does. And he will be somewhere with his laptop and his ones and zeros, and he'll be figuring stuff out. So, again, I always appreciate his time. But that is the big question. And yeah, if you put Mac Jones at Arkansas, what kind of season is he going to have versus Trevor Lawrence? And it's actually easier to boil down what the contribution is in a tougher setting versus one where everything's usually pretty smooth.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.